Hi, and welcome to Bespoke Speaks. This is Bespoke Communications Podcast, where we talk about anything and everything that has to do with communication. I'm Christine, and I'm joined today by a very good friend and former colleague of mine at ArtsEd, Natalie Joel Smith. So hi, Natalie.
Hi, Christine.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It's so good to have you. So will you tell us a bit, Natalie, about what you do?
Sure. So I actually find it quite difficult to put what I do into a word or, you know, a sentence. And it's because it's evolved a lot over the years and continues to evolve, and it encompasses a lot of different areas. It's multifaceted. And so in terms of defining it, I tend to play around with how I do that. So we'll see how it comes out today.
Okay.
It's kind of fun.
Oh, that's exciting.
So one of the areas I work in is as a movement teacher. And I come from the perspective of embodiment as opposed to fitness. So not to say that the movement I teach is not good for your health. Because if we look at health and our fitness in a holistic way, it absolutely is good for that. But it's more about the how is from an embodied perspective. And I'll talk more about what that means as we go through the episode. So the reason I know you, Christine, is because I worked with Christine at ArtsEd, as she said, and I was a movement teacher for the actors and musical theatre students. My background is in yoga, and this evolved over the years into other movement practices such as Feldenkrais, Franklin Method, and I've been inspired by lots of different methodologies over the years, organic intelligence, Fitzmaurice voice work, same as what Christine does. So all these different inspirations have kind of weaved together to mean that, like, yoga is no longer the right umbrella to describe the movement practice because it's too restrictive, because, you know, it implies a certain format and poses and sequences, which so movement is much broader.
So
there's a specialism there, therefore, in performing artists. My background is as a performing artist. I trained at ArtsEd in musical theatre, and that's very much been part of my world for my whole life. And the other part of what I do is also coaching. So coaching as in talkie coaching. And I do this one-to-one, and I also have online courses and forums. And I coach in what I call embodied living, which is to do with how we navigate the challenges that life throws our way, how we navigate our desires, our blocks, our emotions with presence and with compassion. And these words are actually quite big words, what that actually means to do that, and the way in which we can do that is very broad. So we can maybe unpack some of that today if that feels relevant. So yeah, there's the coaching element, there's the movement coaching element, and those two things tend to weave together. And of course, when you consider yourself an artist and you're creative, that is always a part of what you do, and that weaves into everything. So I love to write, and I love to still perform myself, and to, you know, to just have those different creative outlets within everything that I do. And this past year, I've become increasingly interested in also working with a kind of wider collective on an environmental project that I write for. Because, of course, how we are as the individual has an impact on the collective, and the collective has an impact on the individual. And this is a constant conversation. And so to come at it from both angles, as a kind of evolution of humanity, and addressing what the needs of the planet, is also very important to me.
Ooh, really fascinating. Doesn't she sound interesting? I think so.
I'm glad you think so.
Well, I'm really glad that you're here to talk to us today, Natalie. And what I love about Natalie's work is that it really digs into the how. So in terms of, there are a lot of big words that are thrown out in the embodiment world, like embodiment and presence and listening and compassion. And these words are thrown out almost with the understanding sometimes that we like know, like if I just think to myself, I need to be more present, then suddenly I'm more present. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, well, how do I actually become more present? Mm-hmm. And that's something that your work really investigates on many levels.
Yeah.
And this is why I dearly respect you and love working mm-hmm. with you.
Thank you,
but also why I wanted to talk to you today on the episode, because Natalie and I a few weeks ago were having a really fascinating conversation about listening and the importance of listening in the Communication Act. And sometimes that's the part of the equation that can get missed in communication coaching. I don't have a lot of clients or students who come to me because they want to listen better. They come to me because they want to speak better. They want to have more of an impact. They want to feel more confident. And all of that stuff is really important and really, really valuable. But what that means is that sometimes I spend a lot of my time coaching people on how they sound, what their body language is, and the priority isn't always on how that's received.
Mm.
So, and the thing is that that's really what matters, is how it's received. So we need to be able to tune in to how it's being received, which is that act of listening.
Absolutely. And I would say that there's the two-way act of listening. So all the things that you describe that people come to you about mm. for confidence, mm. for their body language, for how their voice sounds. The first step really to cultivating those things is listening.
Yeah.
It's right. an inward listening mm-hmm. and an outward listening. And as we cultivate that ability, that impacts how we respond and how we be. Mm. And so it's a constant kind of flow, I guess, of listening in and listening out. And this is what we could also describe as presence.
Yeah. Will you tell us a bit more about what you mean by the difference between those two things, listening in versus listening out?
Sure.
Yeah.
So to listen out is to pay attention to what you are experiencing within your environment. Mm. So it's to look at the person. Mm-hmm. It is to look at what is around you. Mm. But more than looking, it's to feel.
Mm.
So when we're talking about, it's probably a good time to say what I mean when we're talking about embodiment.
Mm-hmm.
So really what we're talking about here is embodied listening.
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about embodiment, we are talking about feeling and sensing. Mm. So we're looking at bringing the kind of mental energy of kind of just habitual thought and thinking and reactivity. And I guess dialing that down
mm.
and attuning to sensory experiences,
mm.
What we feel in our bodies, what we see, what we hear, what we smell, our emotional experience,
mm.
and being then responsive
mm-hmm.
from that place. So when we talk about listening out, we are paying attention to the kind of sensory experience around us, the colors, mm. the textures, the sounds, the smells. And when we're listening to another human being and we're listening and paying attention, shall we say, to the environment around us, we want to be doing that from a place of feeling within ourselves. So at the same time, the listening in is happening,
mm.
which is to really be present in our own body,
mm.
which might look like being aware of a flutter in the tummy or the feeling of your breath or the beat of your heart. It's actually very tricky to describe
mm.
these things.
Mm.
because it's experiential.
Yeah.
It's easier to, like all the best experiences in life, right? Mm. You have this like amazing experience. You see the most beautiful sunset, right? You can't impart that on someone else. You can't say something that gives somebody else the experience of that sunset. Yeah. They have to experience it and feel it for themselves. Mm. And I honestly think it's a measure of some of the most beautiful things in life is that it can be challenging to articulate them. And I guess that's where art comes in, right? It's an articulation, I guess, of feeling in many ways, depending on the art form. But yeah, it's... when you have an embodied experience, you know. So it might be that you are, let's use nature as an example because it's a great one for being more embodied, that you are stood in a kind of wide open place and you maybe high up a hill and you're looking out to sea and you have that vastness around you. And maybe you feel yourself kind of take in the air and suddenly, and there's a softening and there's this maybe a tingle on your skin and you suddenly really feel the earth under your feet. That's an embodied experience. As opposed to, there's the sea. Can I try to enjoy the sea?
Yeah, right, which is just a thought.
A thought, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
It's being with, which is actually language I got from you, Christine, which a number of years ago, to be with something. Is very kind of powerful. So yeah, the language we use to guide the experience is very important. You know, whether we're coaching or teaching movement or voice or, you know, working in a rehearsal room.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking to guide an embodied experience of things, a really present experience that involves listening in and listening out, there's certain language that we can use that really helps cultivate that.
Yeah, so it's really a listening is not just about hearing or thinking, even though both of those things are important. It's a full sensorial experience. Exactly. What do I hear, but also what do I see, what do I feel? Not just what do I feel in terms of my actual tactile sense, but what's going on internally, like internal sensations that are happening. I love that you mentioned breath also, because that's something that I'm very much interested in, curious about. But also thinking about in terms of, I almost like to think of breath as like a sixth sense. Interesting that that's the number that it would be.
Very apt.
Yeah. Because if you're not breathing, it's hard to hear, actually. Yeah. It's really hard to hear if you're not breathing because your body is starting to shut down.
Yeah.
And it has way more of an important priority, which is that you are now kind of slowly starting to die. I mean, you're not going to if you stop breathing, but your body thinks, oh, I'm not getting oxygen. And so everything goes internal until you do get that next breath. So it's the breath. And also at the same time, you don't have to control your breathing in order to listen. It just needs to be happening. So there's a difference between holding the breath versus, okay, now I have to control the breath. Because if we're trying to control the breath, we can't really listen either because we're having to think about controlling the breath.
Totally. It's still an act of doing rather than being.
Yeah. So I love the way you described it of noticing, oh, I just took in a deep breath when I was smelling the sea.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because that's a beautiful, like, embodied noticing that's not a need to control that experience in some way.
I love that you just use the word noticing. If you take something like the term mindfulness that's used a lot, which is a lot about noticing, paying attention to thoughts and experiences, there's also a term bodyfulness.
Tell me about that.
Well, It actually encompasses mindfulness, but it is wholer, fuller, because it's noticing those experiences
yeah.
within and being able to pay attention to. Well, there's a book called Bodyfulness. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
So if people are interested in that
term
and a deep exploration of that, that would be a great place to go for it.
Okay. Fantastic.
I kind of feel with what you just said, it would be a good opportunity to pick up on the nervous system.
Yeah.
And the part that conditioning, and I've already used the word reactivity
mm-hmm.
versus responding
yeah.
plays in all of this.
Yeah.
So
especially in terms of listening. Sometimes we're listening from a reactive place rather than a responding place.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm.
So when Christine just mentioned about the holding of the breath and also the controlling of the breath and about that being, you know, the body starts going shut down, am I going to die? You know, because that is a survival response.
Mm.
So why? Why does that happen? So we all have what's known as conditioning within us, beliefs that we have built up subconsciously throughout our lives,
mm.
through many develop in our childhood. They develop through, continue to develop throughout our adulthood according to what we experience. Often traumas, and when I say trauma, kind of big T
mm.
and little t, big T being like really kind of monumental events
mm-hmm.
where your sense of safety is profoundly threatened.
Mm-hmm.
This could be being involved in a natural disaster or some form of accident or abuse.
Mm.
Trauma, little t, is much more incremental, developmental. Any time where we feel unsafe, yeah. like we don't belong or we're threatened in some way,
mm.
our body logs this.
Mm.
Information comes through our brain and our body, and it gets stored.
Mm.
And it gets stored as a memory so that we can stay safe
mm-hmm.
in future times where something happens, it goes, that information comes into our brain and it pulls into our subconscious and it says, am I safe? Now, if something's deemed as a threat, according to this conditioning that's logged in our system, then our nervous system responds accordingly
mm-hmm.
to being unsafe. Just to say, there's also kind of social, cultural conditioning, intergenerational trauma,
mm.
stuff that does not belong to us, that is ancestral. So this stuff runs deep.
Mm.
So this isn't like I'm broken, I need to fix myself of all of it, but it's this kind of ongoing healing process that we can choose to engage with in our lives to live beyond our trauma.
Mm.
Because what it essentially does is it can keep us sort of stuck in a reactive state.
Mm-hmm.
So information comes in, body perceives a threat, nervous system says, I'm not safe. We'll go into some form of survival mode,
mm-hmm.
which could be fight to defend, could be flight, get the hell out of here,
mm-hmm.
could be freeze, just stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be the fourth one's known as either fawn or placate. Or please, depending which word you prefer to use.
Mm.
And that is to please, to appease, to somehow make okay.
Mm.
And we will default to different reactions depending on what we've experienced in our lives and what we have subconsciously learned keeps us safe.
Mm-hmm.
So to bring this back around, a bit of context here.
Yeah.
So some of you listening may already know this information or it might be new to you. To bring this back around to listening, if we're in a scenario where we are speaking, so on stage, in a rehearsal, an audition, public speaking,
mm.
with family,
mm-hmm.
socially, in a relationship, having a challenging conversation, if we're in a scenario, or maybe we're sharing our passion or desire,
mm.
often when there's high stakes.
Yeah.
And something in our system may log that there's some kind of threat. What if I get laughed at? What if I'm not heard? What if I'm shut down? What if someone attacks? And so according to what we're picking up on and our nervous system is picking up on, we may go into a reactive state. Mm. We may not need to be picking up on anything. We may just believe that from some time in our life, from using our voice, that it is not safe to use our voice. Mm-hmm. And therefore the way in which we use our voice is inhibited by this. Mm-hmm.
And that could be habitual, like you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. So it just becomes the way we do it. So that could be, for example, doing that with a freeze habit might look like your throat feels really dry, you can't get your words out, it stumbles, you feel like cramp around your throat, it's like you don't want to get the words out, you can't get the words out.
That can be monotone also when there's freeze. Often the when the system really goes into freeze, the nerve, the vagus nerve that runs through you that innervates your larynx and your facial expression gets redirected back into the vital organs, essentially. So things happen like you just lose all the prosody in your voice, so the kind of up and down range, as well as your facial expression. So if you encounter somebody who is quite monotone and who doesn't really seem to be alive in the face, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
They might actually be super highly stimulated, but their system is going into freeze because it's just overload.
And isn't this interesting that if we, well, this works both ways. If we can pick up on that in others, and if we can pick up on that in ourselves, doesn't that give us way more choices?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So like, I'd like to give maybe like a fight example well, just to give an alternative. Might be that whenever you speak, you know, the voice becomes kind of punchy and becomes elevated or becomes faster, and there's a sense of defensiveness to the tone, or even the language that you use become quite like that. It could also still be quite tight and restricted, because that's definitely a part of the staying safe mechanism, but that might manifest in a different way to a freeze response.
Yeah.
And the way that your nervous system goes is just going to depend on what your system has learned is the response that's going to keep you safe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when we...
To add in a flight response also.
Oh, please.
Speaking way too fast.
Yes.
So just trying to get the situation over with as quickly as possible. Or mumbling. Like, that could probably be freeze as well. But there's something about mumbling of I'm not gonna really gonna completely commit to this.
Yes.
That there's a flight element.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Interrupt, but I just
no, it's
give
fine.
A, yeah.
Well, it's kind of made me think placate as well. We should cover all four. Mm-hmm. There's probably as well tons of examples that Christine and I aren't giving here.
Yeah.
We're just kind of giving a smallest board of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that comes to mind for placate is apologizing for yourself within the choice of language, repetition. Maybe like trailing off, going maybe soft sometimes, you know, don't be too big.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a bit of like a stay small kind of response.
Mm.
And the energy is often like very outward, like looking to make sure everybody's kind of happy around you. So it's not a centered, I mean, none of these, when we're in these responses, are responses where we're really in our own spine and our own center, because they are reactive. They're the staying safe mechanism.
Yeah.
Yeah. So where are we going with this? Listening.
But so interesting. I think really, really interesting and relevant for anybody who is communicating publicly.
Mm.
And by publicly, I'm using that term really loosely. That could be, you know, with your mom.
Yeah,
that could be with an audience of 500.
Yeah,
that could be as a character. That could be as yourself.
Yeah,
that these are things that can happen. That if you know about them, and you have tools for helping you.
Yeah,
you have choice. So everybody, we can't get rid of fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. We can't get rid of those things because they're instinctive responses. They're often happening at a subconscious level.
Absolutely.
So that's the thing. It's a different part of your brain than your thinking brain. But if we know what they are and we know what alternatives feel like.
Yes.
Then we have options when we go into them.
Absolutely. For
how to come back out, or is it, do I want to be in fight right now? Maybe I want to be in fight right now.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's appropriate.
Yeah. And maybe, yeah, I need to stand my ground. Maybe I need to, you know, so there are ways to both embrace these human states,
yeah,
that have kept us, you know, evolutionarily going for this long. And there are also other options if, like, actually, no, I don't need to be in fight right now, because when I'm in fight, I'm not really hearing what anybody else is saying to me.
Yeah.
Because I'm too busy trying to live, you know, trying, yeah, to, on a instinctive level, trying to survive and protect.
Yeah.
So how can I perhaps come into a different state?
Absolutely. Mm. That's key, is that when we are in that survival mode, I just want to pick up on something you just said there, is that it inhibits our ability to truly be listening.
Yeah.
So where my mind went with that a little bit is, as an example for actors, there's a difference on stage between what is your own nervous system state, mm-hmm, in that moment versus what might be the nervous system state of a character that you're inhabiting,
yes,
you know? And being able to discern between the two so that you can be both present with what's going on with yourself, mm-hmm, and let that into an honest performance of a character,
yeah,
portrayal.
I'm so glad you're bringing this up, because this comes up all the time. Not necessarily with this language of, mm, nervous system, but with the student actors that I work with, it comes up all the time of, well, I need to be feeling exactly or having the exact same experience as the character. So if the character is grounded or destabilized, I need to be destabilized.
Yeah.
But the thing is that there is a very big difference between acting and real life, which is that in acting, you always have to be clear in your communication. Always, yeah, always, always. Unless otherwise stated by the playwright or the screenwriter, we always have to understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Whereas in real life, if I fall apart, I mean, often nobody has a clue what I'm saying, you know, because like that starts, yeah, to happen, right?
Yeah.
So we don't have that luxury as performers. So, yeah, we have to keep our own nervous systems grounded in the experience, yeah, that we're having, so that actually, because in real life, we try not to feel stuff.
Yeah.
Right? In acting, we're trying to have the experience so that we can share it.
Yes.
So that is a key difference. And if we're not allowing ourselves to ground into that, we also can't communicate clearly what the experience is. So I'm just really glad you brought that up, essentially. And we can't hear.
Yes, exactly. And this comes back to being with. It's like we're not trying to override our, yeah, own nervous, right, system response. There's actually a paradox here.
Yeah.
It's like if something has happened and you have a performance to do, and the something that has happened has profoundly affected your own nervous system state, being in your head in that place of shit, I've got performance to do, and how am I going to get through this, and I need to not be feeling like this, and this is a problem because I've got this thing to do and I just can't focus, blah, blah, blah. The first thing we have to do is just get present with what we are actually experiencing, because that is going to ground us in the here and now anyway.
Mm.
And that becomes the bridge from where we step into what happens next, and actually we're then listening more fully to ourselves and able to listen and respond there live in the moment, which is what makes live theatre amazing,
mm-hmm,
to the other performers on stage and the audience and the environment that we're in.
Mm.
So it all starts with being able to not need to escape what's happening in the moment,
mm,
and find the tools and the means to be with,
yeah,
and to feel, you know, really in a society, in a culture that tells us a lot of the time that we should be feeling a certain way,
mm,
or we should be okay, or is very uncomfortable with the uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We, mm-hmm, kind of get into the realms of vulnerability here.
Mm.
You know, because to really listen sometimes can feel vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
To really be with another person and feel them.
Yeah, it is. Because, yeah, it requires you to, in a way, God, you're so right. In a way, listening can be just as, if not more vulnerable sometimes than speaking.
Yeah.
Because you are really allowing yourself to be with somebody else and to let them affect you.
Yes.
And that's why I think it's so easy to not do it. As in, what I mean by that is, because everything you just said applies to acting, but I think it applies to any public speaking situation.
Absolutely.
And I will say for both, it's so easy when you're speaking publicly to just talk at somebody.
Yeah.
Because that requires no vulnerability at all.
Yeah.
Right? Whether it's as a character. So if you're doing this from an acting perspective, you've already decided how you're going to say your lines.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the other person or people on stage are doing.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how you actually feel because you've already decided how you're going to feel. Yeah. So you're going to try to force yourself to feel those things. From a public speaking perspective, you've decided what you're going to say and you're not going to kind of try to watch the audience while you say it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, acknowledge, not that you don't come in with something planned, but just that we're open to how we say it might shift.
Mm.
And what's come up for me a lot recently in working with actors specifically is we've been doing units on monologues the last term. And most of what we're talking about, even though they're speaking the whole time, is are they listening or not?
Mm-hmm.
And as in, we do so much listening even while we're talking.
Yes.
Because we're, you know, if you're like right now in my conversation with you, I'm watching your body language as I'm talking to you. I'm hearing your verbal responses. I'm, you know, I'm sensing with my body how your body language is affecting me and how your responses are affecting me. This is what we do when we communicate with each other, because I'm trying to see, you know, is she on the same page as me? Does she get what I'm talking about? Am I confusing her? Mm. Am I, you know, we're so smart that we can do all this at the same time. You know, we don't give ourselves enough credit actually for how much we can really receive and perceive. And I'm just so curious about that in the context of, now where was I going with this? It was somewhere brilliant. No, wait, I've got it. So what it was we were talking about the vulnerability of listening. And the point I was making was that it's a vulnerability that happens also when we're talking. And we sometimes try to shut that out.
Yes.
Especially when we're talking. So we just go, okay, I'm talking at you now. But actually, that's not really inspiring communication, whether it's acting or otherwise, because the person knows that you're shutting them out. We know when we're being talked at because we haven't actually been invited in the conversation.
Christine, that is so significant. And the word that came to me, firstly, as you said it, I found my own like exhale just came through. And the word that came to me was about connection, communication. Is ultimately about connecting.
Mm.
And connection is the thread that weaves together the fabric of life.
Mm.
You know, whether we are public speaking with our friends, with our loved ones, on stage, on screen, we are looking to foster a connection.
Mm.
And when we are in some way protecting or preserving ourselves, not in some way, because like you said before, it's not that we want to shut out that we have these nervous system responses. It's the most natural thing. But I guess it's when, with no awareness, our protection mechanisms are running the show on autopilot. We can inhibit our ability to truly connect.
Mm-hmm.
So listening is an act of connection, just as speaking is.
Mm.
All forms of communication are. And what I guess you and I are really exploring is how we break down some of the barriers of inhibition that hold us back from really experiencing that connection to ourselves and others and the space in between.
Yeah.
I had this great therapist for years, and she spoke about relationship as the space in between.
So ooh, she like was like, that.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's great.
Because that's exactly what it is, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know, we've got this kind of, we can pay attention to ourselves, we can pay attention to another, and we can also pay attention to the space in between, which is the relationship. You know, we can actually take some kind of, I was going to say responsibility, but I think it's not quite the right word. We can be aware of all of those components. Yeah.
Yeah. What I love about that also from a voice perspective is that that's what you're doing vocally. You're filling the space.
Yeah.
Between you and the other. I mean, literally, that's the physics of it. Your sound waves are traveling.
Yeah.
In the space to who you're talking to. And then there's that feedback loop of, and then I release to breathe and I hear what you have to say.
Yes.
You know, so there's something really gorgeous about that.
And when we can, as you said about listening whilst you're talking, as we kind of practice and hone the ability to do that, what we're then filling the space with, as you so beautifully put it, is something that is very alive and true to that moment. So when we get into the realms of talking about authentic voice, again, authenticity is another word, isn't it, that gets battered around. What does it really mean? I believe this is another one of those personal experiential explorations of what does it mean to be authentic to yourself, within yourself. And yeah, to listen and be responsive, whether someone else is speaking or you are speaking yourself, just helps to bring an authenticity to that conversation.
Yeah.
Because it's alive in the here and the now.
And because you're willing to be there. For the conversation.
Yeah.
To physically be with, emotionally be with, spiritually be with.
Yeah.
Because you are listening from an embodied place, which means it's going to affect you.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's one of the keys to authenticity, is that you have to let yourself be affected by what's going on instead of presenting what you think should be how you should present yourself.
100%.
And it does. That is vulnerable. That is not easy. I mean, actors train for 3 years so that they can do this.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's something that sometimes people who are not from the arts forget, that they just think they should just be able to do this.
Yeah.
You know, but actually, because of the conditioning that you talked about, you know, babies can do this effortlessly. And that's why we're drawn to it, is because because it's called authenticity, because it is who we are originally.
Yes. You
know? It's just that babies have no social conditioning yet, you know, and if we were to start acting like babies, everyone would find us really weird.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like if we were really to do the things that babies did or do, and young children do, like it would be odd if I were in a grocery store and I just started screaming because I decided I needed to have a fit. Do you know, do you know what I mean?
So, it's appropriate use of what we learn.
Yeah.
And actually, this is something else that's really important when we're looking at listening in our day-to-day life and how we communicate. There's such a valid space for this part of us that keeps us safe.
Yes.
Because this is about boundaries.
Yeah.
Because not everyone can hold our truth.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone has earned our truth. You know, so if we just go around being completely splat in our communication, actually we do leave ourselves vulnerable to potential threat that could be harming to us.
That's right.
So when we learn to listen and tune in, I mean, I can give an example, actually, of this. I had an interaction recently with someone who was displaying some narcissistic tendencies, which I was aware of because I've experienced them before in a way that was quite impactful, and there was a kind of recovery period involved in that. And this time, my ability to spot the tendencies, because of the way I was listening, because of my ability to listen to how that person was communicating, I really liked this individual. I had no qualms with them or anything like that. I just knew that there were aspects of their communication, and I could feel those red flags going off, that there was a possibility that that this person had narcissistic tendencies, and that it would be safer for me to hold a tight container.
Yeah.
Which I was able to do in a very kind of loving and compassionate way, like not shutting that person down, not, you know, freezing, running away from communicating with them, but just knowing how far I wanted to go in what I said, and knowing that this was probably not someone I was going to let get close because that wouldn't be safe to me. So this is where, that's just quite a good example of how listening can then affect what we say and how we say it and how close we let someone. So our protection mechanisms can be incredibly useful.
They're so important. There's something about the way you said it earlier, actually, where you were talking about honoring, I think you specifically used the word honoring, and it was something in the context of honoring our impulses is not the word you use, but basically honoring what's coming up for us.
Yeah.
And what I love about the way you put it, and listeners, you can go back through the episode to see exactly how she put it, because she put it much more articulately than that. But what I loved about this idea of honoring is honoring includes honoring when things like fight, flight, and freeze and fawn come up. And then awareness allows you to ask yourself, is this what I want right now?
Yeah.
Is this just conditioning? Or actually, do I need to be in a protective mode right now?
Yes.
Because the person who I'm dealing with is actually making me feel under threat.
Yes.
Or is that just some conditioning that I'm not aware of for some reason? And would I like to take a different approach? Right. So it's about having that choice. It's not about we are boundaryless. We can't truly connect if we have no boundaries. And it's also not fair to go around and just speak our truth to everybody. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important part of the listening process. I think that's why it's so vital in the connecting aspect of communication. And that's where what I think is getting lost, actually, in human communication in the 21st century, because of apps like Twitter, Facebook, even Instagram. People are really encouraged to find their voice. And that is so important. And I, as a voice coach, really advocate that. But if we don't have the listening component, and if we're not considerate at all of how what we're going to say is going to be received, then it's not compassionate. It's not compassionate communication. And we just have to consider what kind of communicators we want to be.
Yeah.
And that includes for acting as well. You know, in terms of that word connection that you use, there can't be real connection without listening. And just speaking your truth to somebody doesn't mean they're going to hear it either. And they're definitely not going to want to hear it if they're feeling like it doesn't matter to you how they receive it.
Yeah.
You know? So I think there's a twofold aspect to that. One is the listening in of I'm allowed to have my own boundaries and I can speak what feels like the thing I want to say in this moment. I don't have to just say something just because it's true. And it's okay if I go into a survival mode, if that's where I want to be, because that's why they're there. They're there to be important signals to you. But that's the thing. For some of us, they've become habitual, so they lose their power as signals.
Absolutely. And they become an autopilot
way
of being that can inhibit us from fulfilling our potential or having meaningful relationships or truly connecting.
Yeah. So there's
that. The nuance.
It's the signal versus the habit.
Yes.
And then the other side of that is that the listening allows for the connection so that it's also not about, well, I just get to say whatever I want to say whenever I want to say it, but that I care about how what I'm saying affects you and about how it's going to be received.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really about making space within communication for the feeling component, you know, which is what we're talking about. When we're talking about embodied listening is the, yeah, the feeling in and the feeling of what you're experiencing out and how that's affecting you.
Yeah.
And therefore how it's affecting the, where the other person's at.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Where this has led me is to consider what you said right at the start of the podcast, which is the how.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like we've talked a lot about the what and the why and the the nuances of it all. And we talked about that it could be useful to do a practice that that helps people access an embodied experience of listening.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to say about that is, you know, I guess to use my analogy earlier really of fitness is like you might go to the gym to like work a particular muscle. It's the same with being embodied. Depending on where we're starting out at, which will be different from all of our, for all of us, as to kind of how embodied our lens of experiencing ourselves and our lives are, we can all develop and cultivate that ability, you know. And what I mean is, it depends on where you start at, is how easy it is or how quick it happens is going to be relative to each individual. But there are ways and means of diving into it and exploring it and working it like a muscle so that it starts to become more natural, so that it starts to just happen. Because like we said, it's not so much a thought. Now, of course, there is an element of we are whole beings and we have these brilliant minds and the mind has to be on board. So we can use our glorious minds in this process, but it is a process of feeling and experiencing, and there are ways into that. And Christine and I talked about a follow-up episode to guide you in an embodied practice that will help hone that ability. And like I said, just like exercising a muscle, the more we do it, the more natural it becomes. And that's when we have these, this is why I talk about embodied practice and embodied living. So embodied practice is really important, like taking the time in our lives to hone the ability to become more embodied and to feel and sense more. And then that is what enables us to do that more within our day-to-day lives and our communication, but that also takes practice and awareness. So the two feed into each other.
Yeah. Well, I think that is a fantastic place to leave it, actually.
Great.
Because that's exactly what we're going to do. So we're going to have Natalie on for a follow-up episode where she guides us through a practice. Is that, does that sound good to you?
Yeah, it sounds great.
And I'm, for one, I'm really excited about this because I think everything Natalie said just spot on of it's great and well and good to talk about this stuff, but what we're actually also here to do is help you practice it. So so how do you do this stuff, right? And there are things you can do to practice and being embodied, as well as more specifically embodied listening.
Yeah.
So we're really looking forward to that, Natalie.
Thank you.
Is there a way that people, first of all, thank you for this episode. This has just been a joy for me to talk with you about all of these things.
Me too. It's been such a pleasure and the way this was born is that we were doing it over dinner. We love to do this anyway.
Yeah, so. I know. This is kind of like what Natalie and I do. It's just we put headphones on and are now recording it, which is just great. We're excited to share it with you. And will you tell our audience a bit more about how they can find out more about you?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to check out my website, it is Natalie with an H, joelsmith.co.uk. And that'll be in the show notes for the spelling. Yeah. And on Instagram, I am at the creative body, which is the_creative_body. And the same on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I'd be really happy to hear from people with questions and inquiries. And I have some resources available and some workshops coming up this year and some online courses. And I do the one-to-one coaching as well. So there's plenty coming up for performing artists, as well as people just wanting to explore themselves and their lives in general, and also just creativity as well in general. So there's something for everyone.
Wonderful. Yeah, I can tell you I've done her online course and it is fantastic. So I can highly recommend that in particular, but also all of the other stuff that she mentioned. I've done workshops with you as well.
Yeah.
So I've worked with you live. I've worked with you online. I just know from both of those things that your coaching is also going to be fantastic.
Thanks, Christine.
So, yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Natalie. And thank you for listening. So as always, we'd love to hear any questions that you have. Feel free to email us at bespoke.com. Oh, no. Oh, I always get the email address wrong every single time. bespoke.com contact@gmail.com. There we go. I just got to keep you on your toes. And, you know, you can also reach out to us on Instagram. We're on Instagram at Bespoke Speaks. You can find us on our website at bespoke-communication.com and on Facebook at Bespoke Communication. So we would love to hear from you, especially questions that are coming up, but also comments. And if you like this podcast, please share it with all of your loved ones. And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.